The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Susan Dellinger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Oprah Magazine, April 2019, Volume 20, Number 4. And this is the first of four installments of the April issue. On this month's cover, Oprah is pictured against a verdant backdrop of a tropical rainforest. Her bright red, ankle-length, gauzy caftan stands out against all the green foliage. She's ready for a hiking adventure with her whittled walking stick, her straw hat, and her tan leather hiking boots. The cover quote from Oprah this month is, "The earth has taken excellent care of us. Let's return the favor." And now let's look at behind the scenes. We have a picture of Oprah standing in the studio in New York City in this red dress and a sombrero that must be about 6 feet wide. It's woven natural and dark, dark brown straw so that it has these concentric circles. And the caption is, "Into the Wild." Looking at this month's cover, you might assume Oprah is having an Amazonian adventure. In reality, she's simply posing at a photo studio in the urban jungle of New York City. Through a little digital wizardry, she would later be one with nature, superimposed against a verdant rainforest backdrop shot by Reuven Affendorf near the edge of the Amazon River in Colombia, the perfect image for our sustainability issue. Little touches help transport her to the tropics from the handcrafted forest floor on which she stood to the hip-shaking playlist. Leave it to Colombian singer Shakira to help Oprah get in the groove. Oprah said, "I look like the dancing emoji. Reuven, where are we going next? Machu Picchu?" And then there's a picture of Reuven Affendorf at the base of the tree where that was used for this month's backdrop. Cover photographer Reuven Affendorf was in Colombia documenting indigenous communities when he found the perfect natural specimen for the cover, a ceiba tree believed to be 400 years old and 230 feet tall. And the caption of the picture of Oprah in her red caftan and the huge sombrero reads, "Is this hat big enough?" said Oprah of the larger-than-life prop, an oversized version of the traditional Colombian sombrero Vuatio. "I'd use it poolside instead of an umbrella," Oprah says. And then we have some snapshots here of women sitting crisscross applesauce and working with fabrics. Lady in Red, The Making of Oprah's Dress. Finding the Inspiration. Stephanie von Watzdorf, founder and creative director of the label FIG, turned to the world's nomadic cultures from Mongolia to Morocco to design this flowy Bella dress. The collaborative effort. Von Watzdorf, pictured above, worked with artisans at a fair trade factory in New Delhi to create the luxurious bohemian look the brand is known for. And finally, it's all in the details. Production lasted about 45 days, with tassels hand-sewn by a team of women. Now, this red gauzy caftan-like dress is just a very full, free-flowing, tiered. Each tier, and there are about four or five of them, from just under the bust line, and they're about 10, 12 inches each. Each tier is gathered, so the dress gets wider and the tiers are more gathered as you go down, and it appears to have kind of a raglan sleeve, which is elasticized at the wrist so that there's, you know, a full gather to the sleeve as well as a ruffle at the wrist. Then we have a picture of Oprah in her white dressing gown being made up, face forward. At the shoot, makeup artist Derek Rutledge honored our issue's green theme with clean formula products. And one of them is the Kajir Weiss eye pencil in black, $30. And Beauty Counter Luminous Powder Highlighter in Topaz, $39 at beautycounter.com. And Vapor Organic Beauty Siren Lipstick in Holiday, $25 at vaporbeauty.com. And Siren is, it's kind of a deep pink, kind of an intense pink. And so now let's move over to Here We Go and hear Oprah's opening comments. And there's another picture of Oprah. This time she's hidden by this sombrero with just the skirt of her red dress showing. And again, she's got the backdrop of that massive tree and all that foliage. Oprah says, "If you've been paying attention to recent news about climate change, you may be wondering where we go from here. What exactly does the future hold? And what should each of us be doing to make it brighter? This month, in a special issue devoted to the environment, we're providing some answers. We asked climate scientists, eco-activists, and other experts to share the things that help them stay hopeful about our planet's fate. And their wise words are an encouraging reminder that while we have a lot of work ahead, think of it as the most important to-do list in human history. There is indeed still time to act. In the fashion world, many designers are already making things better, creating clothes in ways that help minimize harm to the earth. And I'm thrilled to tell you that you don't have to sacrifice style. On page 104, you'll see examples of pieces that are both sustainable and chic, with zero crunchiness in sight. We got only one planet, and it's our job to safeguard it. Throughout this issue, we'll find smart, manageable ways to do just that and stay hopeful in the process. Read on, Oprah." As we do at the beginning of the month, each month, let's head off to the reading room and look at 10 titles to pick up now. The first one is Gingerbread by Helen Oyemi. The singularly whimsical author of Boy, Snow, Bird kneads fairy tales into hallucinatory parables for our own time. Here, two families traverse real and imaginary lands linked by a witchcraft-infused gingerbread recipe. The second title is Survival Math by Mitchell S. Jackson. The author of The Residue Years writes a shattering memoir of his mother's love affair with drugs and his own struggle to reconcile the forces of racism, toxic masculinity, the lure of the hustle, and the composite pops who helped raise him. The third title, Territory of Light, by Yuko Tsushima. Originally published 40 years ago and just now translated into English, this divine slice-of-life novel delicately explicates the sleep-deprived twilight zone of a newly single mother following a nasty divorce. The fourth title is Sing to It by Amy Hempel. The matron saint of the short form bestows her first collection in 12 years, featuring a panoply of lyrical one-page riffs and a profound novella about a home health aide still grappling with the decision to give up a child for adoption. As always, there are dogs. The fifth title is First by Evan Thomas. An esteemed journalist unfurls the life and legacy of Sandra Day O'Connor from a hardscrabble girlhood on a southwestern ranch where, quote, in the unforgiving vastness of the high desert, she had learned to be at once selfless and self-reliant, end of quote, to smashing a judge's ultimate glass ceiling with her appointment to the Supreme Court. And the sixth title is Oksana Behave by Maria Kuznetsova. The 7-year-old Ukrainian-American heroine of this sweet, bitter debut is a wisecracking fatalist who can be counted on to say the inappropriate thing, a tendency that becomes more pronounced as doomed crushes and family crises pile up on the road to adulthood. The seventh title is Queenie by Candace Cardi Williams. After her white boyfriend dumps her, a 25-year-old Jamaican newspaper reporter living in London embarks on a series of ill-advised sexcapades before maturity encroaches in this brazenly hilarious tell-it-like-it-is first novel. The eighth title, Look How Happy I'm Making You, by Polly Rosenwakey. A research biologist who entered medicine after studying fetuses considers getting an abortion. A group of motherless young women gather at a dive bar on Mother's Day. Quote, we weren't quite commemorating and we weren't quite commiserating, end of quote. This polychromatic assortment of fictional tales plumbs the wonders and woes of the maternal. The ninth title is Error of Ignition by Amber Tamblyn. The filmmaker and Joan of Arcadia star melds memoir and contemporary cultural critique into a fiery manifesto on the importance of female-fronted art and activism. And our last title, number 10, The Old Drift by Namwali Serpil. A genre-busting, Afro-futuristic debut novel probing the stain of colonialism and the roots of Zambian independence through the entwined fates of three families. And when we go to the special section this month, which is our section on the environment, I always love to ponder and share with you the way the creative folks at Oprah have created an Oprah-O. And this month, they've done it with blue and green, varying shades of blue and green, Lego bricks. So now that Oprah-O is almost a circle on the outside, kind of a long oval on the inside. There's a green base, lots of little figures. It's got the image of people working, and it's got scaffolding, and there are trees all around it. But the O isn't complete because there's a balloon up at the very top of the picture with strings that are holding cables that are holding the last section of the O to be plopped in the top. And all the stair steps up each side have people working and trees, and there are even white Legos that form the clouds. And there's a side note over here. See the greenery dotting the Lego landscape? The company now has a line of shrubbery and trees produced from plant-based plastic. Lego is pushing to make all its bricks from sustainable materials by 2030. April 2019, our terrestrial home is facing a crisis and no one but us can help it pull through. How, you ask? Join us as we lay out a master plan for the planet. When we turn the page, we have this yellow page with big white lettering, How to Save the Planet. It's now or never. Fellow inhabitants of Earth, here's our to-do list. And then on the facing page, there is a mock-up of the Earth, a blue globe, and all the planets are shown as just brown, dried-up moss and with little dead, looking like little dead trees on it. Trust the science. The facts are facts. The damage is measurable. Let it galvanize us. By Catherine Hayhoe. Climate change is happening. It's supercharging hurricanes, wildfires, droughts, heat waves, and rain. It's heating the oceans and melting the giant ice sheets that anchor our poles, increasing coastal flood risk. Wherever we live on this earth, global warming is affecting us. Yes, us. Climate change doesn't matter just to future generations or to people in the South Pacific. I'm a climate scientist, so I know just how unprecedented these realities are. Climate has never changed this fast in human history. I'm also a Christian, and that's part of why I care about this issue. Because even though it impacts us all, it's the poor, hungry, and vulnerable the world over, the very ones we're told to love and care for, who are disproportionately harmed by these shifts. Yet often when we turn on the news, go online, or talk to a family member, we hear doubt. The climate always fluctuates. Or, but it's so cold today. Or, those scientists are fudging the data. Never mind that according to orbital cycles that drive ice ages, we should be cooling, not warming. Or that individual cold days don't disprove decades of warming. or that we scientists really and truly have no good reason to lie. Why is it so difficult to accept that our climate has been altered and humans are responsible? Because if we don't accept it, when we don't have to disrupt our way of life to address it. If only polar bears, distant future generations, and people who live far away will be harmed, why bother going vegan or buying expensive electric cars? Solutions we think will be unpleasant at best, painful at worst. It's easier to say, the problem isn't real, than to admit, the problem is real, but I don't want to sacrifice anything to fix it. Facts, like gravity, are true regardless of our beliefs. A thermometer doesn't give us a different answer depending on our opinion of it. The planet has warmed nearly 2 degrees Fahrenheit since the Industrial Revolution began, and after carefully examining all the natural reasons why the climate has changed in the past, scientists have no doubt that this time humans are the culprits. By mining and burning massive amounts of coal, oil, and gas. By cutting down and burning forests, and by cultivating vast herds of animals to accommodate our meat consumption, we've been practically wrapping a blanket around the planet. So what can we do? Finding solutions feels overwhelming, I know, but the good news is that there are solutions. And if we act soon enough, we can avoid many of the worst outcomes. Our attitudes and decisions matter. We can make personal choices, buying efficient appliances, eating less meat, and support large-scale progress, transitioning to clean, homegrown sources of energy that generate local jobs, don't pollute our air, and will never run out. Often we look at the world's problems with a sense of powerlessness, but now our future truly is in our hands. And that's why the science matters, because nothing happens until we face it head-on and then decide to get to work. Well, that was number one of ways to save the planet. Now here's the second way. Know the lingo. It's harder to tune out when you get what the words mean. So we have almost a dozen definitions here. The first one, climate. The average weather conditions, typically measured over years. Fluctuations in temperature, precipitation, or other variables that last for an extended period of time are called climate change. Greenhouse gases. Any gases that trap heat in the atmosphere, including carbon dioxide, methane, and hydrofluorocarbons, which are used in refrigerants, aerosol propellants, and fire retardants. The more present they are, the hotter their planet can get. Carbon dioxide, CO2. One carbon atom plus two oxygen atoms equals the mother of all greenhouse gases. It's arguably the most bedeviling to our atmosphere. This molecule is produced by the exhalations of oxygen-breathing animals and, more catastrophically, by the burning of oil, coal, and natural gas. In 2017, the United States released about 5.14 billion metric tons of CO2 into the atmosphere. Our next vocabulary word, emissions. Greenhouse gases or other pollutants released into the atmosphere, often through burning fossil fuels. Next definition, carbon neutral. If an activity that releases CO2, say driving to work, is balanced by the reduction or offsetting of emissions elsewhere, say a CO2 absorbing endeavor like planting trees, that activity is said to be carbon neutral. Fossil fuels, decayed plants and animals, think those from the T-Rex era, transformed by hundreds of millions of years of heat and pressure into natural gas, crude oil, or coal. At last count, in 2017, the U.S. got at least 80% of its energy from the burning of fossil fuels. Next definition, clean or renewable energy. While everyone agrees that solar and wind energy are renewable, the sun will keep shining, at least for several billion more years. How clean they are depends on other factors. Currently, wind and solar energy provide intermittent power that must be supplemented by other sources to maintain consistent supply. Those backups are often coal or somewhat cleaner but still a fossil fuel, natural gas. Until there are enough solar and wind power plants to go around, cleaner energy is really the best way that we can hope for. We have three more definitions. Conservation, protecting or restoring natural environments, resources, and wildlife. Sustainability, the maintaining of conditions that guarantee human society and the natural world can continue to coexist, including through practices like the three R's, reducing, reusing, and recycling. And finally, green, shorthand for related to environmentalism. Number three on our to-do list is think outside the box, or take a page from those who do, to wit, these game-changing ideas coming to a city or coastline near you. Rain, rain, it's okay. Since 2013, the low-lying Netherlands city of Rotterdam has installed 9 water squares. Picture a slightly sunken concrete pool in flood-prone areas, some of which sit 16 feet below sea level. When dry, the squares serve as public gathering spaces where people can lounge, lunch, or play sports. When heavy showers occur, the squares can retain up to 450,000 gallons of runoff from rooftops and streets, keeping it from flooding neighborhoods that can quickly drain it away. Keeping it from flooding neighborhoods that cannot quickly drain it away. Here's another way to think outside the box, growing up. Public gardens are good for the earth. The vegetation can help filter out air pollution, and our personal well-being, a 2018 study suggests, proximity to nature can reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease. But not every city has the resources. Green spaces need to thrive, and Singapore's Gardens by the Bay is an example of how to do a lot with a little. It features a grove of 80 to 160-foot super trees, man-made steel and concrete timbers that support more than 200 species and varieties of orchids, ferns, and other climbing plants, none of which require soil and all of which absorb water from the air. The structures also give bird life cozy spots to call home and provide shade to pedestrians below. And 11 of the 18 trees harness power via embedded solar cells to illuminate themselves after sunset. Another way to think outside the box, talking trash. When landfills are overrun with organic material, onion skins, lawn clippings, they belch methane, the heat-trapping greenhouse gas. One U.S. city doing its part to reduce this noxious emission, Phoenix. In April 2017, the metropolis built a shiny industrial-sized compost facility to turn food and green debris into rich fertilizer. The system is currently converting 55,000 tons of waste annually, allowing the city to divert 33% of its rubbish from landfills. As more people from Phoenix climb aboard the compost train, the facility can be scaled up to tackle 220,000 tons. Another way to think outside the box, H2O. Since 2011, the World Economic Forum has identified water shortages as a huge threat. Think cyber attack level huge to global security. Who are you going to call? Namibia. For more than 50 years, the arid African nation's capital, Windhoek, has recycled its tap water from sewage water, a cheaper and more energy-efficient process than desalinization. And cutting-edge technology is wiping out the yuck factor. The treatment plant in Windhoek can produce 5.6 million gallons of crystal-clear water each day. And cities like Wichita Falls, Texas, and Tel Aviv, Israel, are already following suit. And finally, Coast Guards. Can you picture paddling around Boston's Back Bay on Venetian-style canals or strolling by sponge-like wetlands along New York City's coastline? Rising sea levels threaten Beantown and the Big Apple alike. It's predicted that much of Lower Manhattan, as well as more than 32,000 Boston homes, could face chronic flooding by the year 2100. But both cities are embracing flood prevention plans that include erecting levees to hold back storm surges, turning alleyways into waterways, and elevating buildings above sea level. If these epic sports rivals can find something to agree on, there's hope for us all. And now, here's our fourth tip for saving the planet. Don't forget the kids. As a pioneering lawsuit makes clear, they're the ones who will be cleaning up our mess. Imagine you're a teen again. Say you live in Oregon, where wildfires annually consume large tracts of land, choking the air with pollutants and sometimes torching homes. You wonder, will the wilderness you explored as a child someday be gone? Kelsey Juliana has asked herself just that. The 22-year-old University of Oregon student says, quote, "I've lived through extreme droughts and forest fires," end of quotes. So when she had the chance to become the named plaintiff in a federal lawsuit, she eagerly signed up. Juliana versus United States represents 21 youths, also known as the Climate Kids, and is based on a novel claim that U.S. energy policy, long reliant on fossil fuels, violates young people's constitutional rights. Julia Olson, lead attorney on the case, says, quote, "We argue that the government has knowingly perpetuated the climate crisis for more than 50 years, despite people within government saying that burning fossil fuels has catastrophic consequences," end of quote. As Olson points out, quote, "The Supreme Court has already recognized our rights to personal security and family autonomy, and our plaintiffs are being deprived of both," end of quote. Olson's case also invokes the 14th Amendment's equal protection principles. She goes on to say, quote, "The reality that children will live with climate change for much longer than adults is one of the factors that makes them a class of citizens being discriminated against," end of quote. Juliana and her co-plaintiffs have watched their suit stop, start, and stop again for 4 years. It's currently under review by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in Oregon. The government's requests for dismissal all have been denied. Whatever it takes, the Climate Kids are in it to win. Juliana says, quote, "The civil rights movement needed both bus boycotts and Brown versus the Board of Education to be successful. The grassroots climate movement and youth-led litigation are similarly working together. I know some see that as radical, but it's not. It's patriotic," end of quote. And here are some quotes from the Climate Kids. Vic, 19 of New York, says, "We have the opportunity to force our government to justify what they're doing, or maybe admit they just don't feel like they have to protect us." Then from Colorado, we have a name that I absolutely cannot pronounce. I'll spell it for you and see if you can tackle it. XIUHTEZCATL. "When I see melting ice caps and the deterioration of natural resources, I think about the human beings affected. Despite homes being washed into the ocean and wildfires destroying lives, many people fail to make that personal connection." Levi, 11, of Florida, says, "I live on a barrier island in Florida that will eventually be underwater because of sea level rise. Being part of this case lets me feel like I'm protecting my home." Nathan, 19, of Alaska, says, "If climate change wipes us all out tomorrow, how do we want to be remembered? As the generation that did nothing in the face of adversity and chose profits over people? Or as the generation that, despite all odds, came together to give this problem our best shot?" Number 5 on our to-do list is two pages of statistics, and the heading is Sweat the Small Stuff Because Your Micro Choices Add Up. Dial back your water heater and fridge. You monitor your thermostat. Now do the same for two of your home's biggest energy guzzlers. Refrigerators can keep food safely chilled when set to a moderate 40 degrees. And for some people, a water heater set to 120 rather than the manufacturer default of 140 will provide a perfectly steamy shower. Then we have the great big letters, 8.7 billion. Gallons of water would be saved this year if every American who washes their car at home went to a car wash just once instead, according to the Green Book by Elizabeth Rogers and Thomas N. Costigan. Here's another tidbit. Turn off the water while you brush your teeth. Assuming you brush for 2 minutes twice a day, you could save almost 3,285 gallons per year. 15%. That's how much your highway gas mileage could improve if you used your vehicle's Eco Cruise control setting. Better yet, go electric. The Union of Concerned Scientists estimates that over the course of 1 year, a gas-powered car costs $1,500 to fuel and releases 4.7 metric tons of greenhouse gases. An electric car costs $421 to fuel and releases only 2.3 metric tons. 80% less energy used to make dinner? Yes, please. All it takes is wiser use of your kitchen appliances. A microwave instead of an oven? A pressure cooker that cuts simmering time by up to 70%. When your fridge or AC shuffles off its mortal coils, dispose of it properly. Research shows that one of the key solutions to climate change is managing refrigerants, which accelerate the warming of the atmosphere. To check your closest refrigerant reclaiming facility, check out the EPA's list. 2.34 million tons of greenhouse gas emissions each year. That's just one of the negative impacts of receipt paper printing in the U.S., according to an estimate by Green America. The ATM variety are especially needless, considering you can have an e-receipt sent to your inbox. 90% of the energy used by your washing machine goes to warming its water. Switch to a detergent formulated to work best in cold water. Tide, Purex, Gain, and Persil all make cold water varieties. Back away from beef, sometimes. Forgive us for saying so, but livestock flatulence accounts for 26% of man-made, since we're doing the breeding, methane emissions in the U.S. Methane traps atmospheric heat, speeding up global warming. How to address this gas crisis? Consume less beef and dairy. And now here's a big number. 459,259,300,000. That's one big number, and by one estimate, that's how many single-use plastic bottles are purchased worldwide each year, less than half of which get recycled. While you're breaking your bottle habit, here's another eco-conscious change worth making, switching to LED light bulbs. It's theorized that their rapid, widespread adoption could reduce energy consumption by the equivalent of 44 power plants by 2027. When we turn the page, we have another graphic of the Earth. And instead of the one that's dried up and brown at the beginning of this article, this one is a cheery blue and green. Number 6 on our to-do list, agitate. 3 smart, doable ways to make your voice matter. And here's your first, green your vote. The Vote Climate U.S. Political Action Committee, VoteClimatePAC.org, has analyzed the public positions of every member of Congress, ranking them on a spectrum from climate zero to climate hero. Cast your ballot accordingly, but don't stop there. With the announcement of the United States' withdrawal from the Paris Agreement on Climate Change, it is incumbent on local governments to keep leading the fight. Urge your governor and mayor to join the United States Climate Alliance, usclimatealliance.org, and the Global Covenant of Mayors for Climate and Energy, globalcovenantofmayors.org. Respectfully, and insist that your state and city legislators articulate a plan for how they'll help reverse and adapt to the effects of climate change. If they don't have an answer, support someone who does. Here's the second way to agitate. Put your money where your principles are. At least 20% of global greenhouse gases are emitted by publicly owned fossil fuel companies, according to the environmental nonprofit CDP's 2017 Carbon Majors Report. Odds are that some of them feature in the funds fueling your 401k. Drain the oil money from your retirement account and take stock in the future with investment funds devoted to green energy, like the Fidelity Select Environment and Alternative Energy Portfolio, FSLEX, a new alternatives fund, NALFX. You might also consider individual investments in the diverse coalition of companies, IKEA, General Motors, and Etsy, to name a few, listed at their 100.org, all of which have pledged to use 100% renewable power by 2050 or earlier. And the third and final way to agitate, keep your company in good company. If you own or work for a small business, nearly half of private sector employees do. Join or ask your employer to join the American Sustainable Business Council, ASBCouncil.org, which advocates for legislation and other policies that privilege a threefold bottom line: people, planet, and profit. While you're at it, let your local Chamber of Commerce know that clean, cheap, renewable energy is good for every kind of business and should be a top priority. And remember, customers do take notice. According to a 2017 Nielsen survey, 69% of North American consumers say it's, quote, extremely or very important that companies implement programs to improve the environment, end of quote. And then number 7 is our final item on our to-do list. Don't panic. Since 2006, the Climate Reality Project, founded by former Vice President and ardent environmentalist Al Gore, has trained more than 17,000 climate reality leaders of all ages and nationalities to spread the word about climate change. We asked a few to tell us how they stay positive amid warming poles and rising seas. And we have 5 of them here. The first one is Maddie Adkins, 20, of Austin, who says, I try to remember that there is still so much we haven't lost. When I first heard about the effects of climate change, I thought, even if I do everything in my power, will it be enough to unbleach the coral reefs? But when we focus only on the things we've lost, we lose sight of the many, many things we still have time to save. The lands that haven't been deforested, the coastlines not yet underwater. These are beautiful, nourishing, wild places I love. And fighting the climate crisis from a place of love rather than fear is more sustainable for the soul. Bill Bradbury, 69, of Salem, Oregon, says, I'm convinced that in the coming years, our country will flip into developing alternatives to fossil fuels, not only because we need to, but also because those alternatives are cheaper. Jamie Margolin, 17, of Seattle, says, What makes me hopeful is the fellow youths I work with to raise awareness of climate issues. We're just a bunch of broke high school kids, but every day we get on conference calls ready to organize mass mobilizations and social media campaigns. In terms of solutions, we have everything we need. There's no reason to wait. Jotsiri Pando, 39, of Mexico City, says, When I think about the destruction and harm humans have done to the planet, I immediately think about the people I've met who are doing what they can where they are. Those who work to save nearby forests and lakes, or their parks, or the trees outside their homes. I've been especially moved and inspired by indigenous people fighting against mining, logging, and fracking companies. There is always someone trying to save their most beloved place, and that's where it all starts. Weetai Kwok, 55, of San Francisco, says, I've grown more hopeful in recent years, not less, because humans are increasingly waking up to the threat of climate change. China and the U.S., uneasy allies at best, came together to agree to address the crisis. Who would have thought this was possible? Or that Pope Francis would appeal to all peoples of the earth to take urgent action? I've worked in solar for a decade, and system costs have declined nearly 75%. A startling leap in progress. Electric cars have made huge strides. They're quieter, non-polluting, and fun to drive. They're not a sacrifice. They're just better. Finally, in engaging with the community as a climate leader, one thing has become clear to me. People care about these issues. Young and old, conservative and progressive, most want to know how they can help. Each month we have a two-page photo spread with the heading, Where Are You Going? And we have a description of the person who's in the photo talking about what their inspiration is, what their bliss is, what they do for to be inspired. And this month we have a picture of a woman out in a field full of peonies, pinks and whites, and almost red, magenta. And the background is the Alaska Mountains and a waterway. It's very hazy, snow-covered mountains in the background. To a greener future, Michelle Lafreniere, farmer in Homer, Alaska. She says, I came to Alaska in 1979 with about $30 in my pocket. I'd never flown before, and the first time I saw the ocean was from the airplane window. The coastline was so wild and open. 10 years later, my husband and I bought 23 uncultivated acres, and in 2009, we started Chili Root Peony Farm. We do everything sustainably and organically, encouraging growth with compost, tea, and bone meal. That's how I was raised. My parents were extremely poor, so the idea of spending money on synthetic fertilizers or pesticides was sacrilegious to them, and our plants have completely thrived. Though the farm is flourishing, something troubles me about our flowers. Nearly all are flown to customers in the lower 48 states and Canada. From day one, I've struggled with reconciling the environmental costs of shipping them, the fuel used, the effects on our ozone layer. It's a common practice, unfortunately. Up to 80% of the cut flowers bought in this country are imported internationally. We're trying to improve our methods. One company I work with is proposing driving shipments in a refrigerated truck to a single U.S. hub. It'd take longer, but mean fewer long-haul flights. The goal is that someday people will laugh about how we all used to fly blossoms around the globe. For me, climate change has literally hit home. I've been watching the glaciers across the bay for 40 years, and they're disappearing. What was once ice is bare rock. Species are migrating north. I never used to see hummingbirds because our climate was too cold, and now they're flitting around my garden. When it should be snowing, it pours rain instead. But right now, I do my best to do no harm in my little footprint. I'm raising these frilly pink and cream softball size blooms with care, trying to bring a bit more beauty into the world. Let's look now at an article in Live Your Best Life. And there's a big picture here, and an artist is standing beneath a big installation that she has done, which is she's recreated all this various types of coral reef, and she's done it in clay. The center of this installation that she's looking up at is just vibrant with color, and then as you get further out away from the center, it just gets bleached. And here's the heading for this picture, Save Our Coral. One of the greatest threats to reefs is coral bleaching, which climate change may be accelerating. Warmer oceans and pollution trigger a stress response in coral that forces its life-sustaining and color-generating algae to flee, and the coral to turn white and become vulnerable to disease. The good news? We can help by doing simple things like avoiding sunscreens made with oxybenzone and octinoxate. Both chemicals are thought to reduce coral's resiliency. Time to dive in and do your part. And there's a close-up of a section of this art installation, and it has some pretty brilliant pinks and sort of taupey colors and golds. The heading is Make Believe. In pursuit of her higher calling, one artist dives deep. Apologies to Finding Dory, but the kaleidoscopic coral reefs in films don't tell the whole story. In fact, due in part to ocean warming and pollution, reefs around the world are losing their brilliant color. More than 90% of them could be in dire straits by 2050. That's why Courtney Madison treats conservation as an art form. Madison, who has a degree in marine ecology and ceramic sculpture, says, quote, "Scientific data don't always inspire emotional connection. If I can help people experience the exuberance of coral reefs, they might be moved to defend them," end of quote. Madison, 33, has pursued this path since 2011, sculpting clay installations with hundreds of pieces for museums and scientific institutions alike. Her subject and her work share physical similarities. Calcium carbonate may be found in both coral and ceramic glazes, and metaphysical ones. She says, quote, "My pieces are easily breakable. If you handle living coral, you can kill it," end of quote. Most striking is how Madison captures coral's fragility. Her sculpture's peripheral objects display ghostly stand-ins for bleached coral. Says Madison, quote, "I want you to wonder whether this ecosystem is collapsing or recovering, because the turning point is now." And on the sidebar, we have a heading called Pause and Reflect, and that's P-A-W-S. How to responsibly pamper your pets. So you're in one of the 85 million pet-owning families in the U.S. that wants to buy its dog or cat a toy without being wasteful. Here are three guilt-free options. The first one, Bone to Pick. San Franciscan Rose Shattuck's company, The Foggy Dog, turns upholstery remnants from its line of dog beds into canvas toys, each covered in a pattern like florals or stripes. Shattuck says, quote, "There's a lot of waste in textile products, so making something else out of the fabric isn't rocket science," end of quote. Shattuck stuffs the squeakers with fiber made from plastic bottles and ships nearly every bone-shaped toy in a recycled craft envelope. Go to thefoggydog.com. The second is Top Billing. It looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, and is made with durable hemp canvas, vegetable-based dyes, and antimicrobial organic wool. Then it must be this duck from Honest Pet Products. The Wyoming company's noisemaker Waddler can float, and if you're willing to remove its internal plastic chirper, is entirely compostable. HonestPetProducts.com. And next we have something that looks like a pink frosted donut with sprinkles. Sweet deal. Craftastic pet lover Vanille Gavinko first tried making cat toys when she volunteered at a New York City animal shelter. Now her miniature delights are available to any feline family. These adorable donuts are constructed of plastic bottle-based fabric and jammed full of pesticide-free catnip and other herbs. Gavinko's shipping practice is sustainable, too. Her envelopes and business cards are recyclable, and her packing tape is biodegradable. Go to wantmoremeows.etsy.com. The first page of Love That this month is a beautiful pastel blue vegan leather knapsack. And they've opened the top of it and they've filled it with lovely roses, whites, pale pinks, pale oranges, and green foliage. And all this is against a lavender backdrop. Ahead of the pack, We're giving the sweet little knapsack from Matt and Nat the green light. This luxe-looking vegan leather the brand is known for, nothing comes from animals, not even the glue, is so supple it feels like the real thing. Plus the roomy inside, bank on enough room for a 13-inch laptop, is lined with material made solely from recycled plastic bottles, an average of 21 per bag. And who doesn't love a plethora of pockets? There's a grand total of 5 to stash a bouquet of essentials. So this is sort of a pebbly looking, very soft looking vegan leather with a canvas strap and a flap at the top that unzips. And what we can see from this angle is a zipper across the front as well, and it's $150, and go to mattandnat.com. Now let's look at great buys under $150, responsibly designed pieces to freshen up your spring style. For $145, we have a V-necked, kind of cropped sweater, cashmere with a conscience. This cozy sweater comes from a fair trade factory in Dongguan, China, at an equally fair price, and go to everlane.com. And this is, again, that baby blue, like I said, deep V neck, sort of a ribbed look and cropped. Waste not, want not. Fabric scraps left over from Ace & Jig's garment production are used to make these slip-ons. Keds times Ace & Jig, available April 12th at Nordstrom.com. So they're your classic Ked, and these have a really bright, almost sort of southwestern look print in lots of bright colors, oranges, yellows, greens, and blues, and they're $120. Jeans from J. Crew. You'll welcome these to your jean pool. They're organic cotton produced with renewable energy and recycled H2O from jcrew.com. They're $90. They have 4 copper-looking buttons, sort of low riders with the crinkles across the front and the hips, so they look very worn. And now we have, for $88, look great and feel comfortable in a relaxed fit top manufactured from organic cotton from GarnetHill.com. This is almost like scrubs you see at a hospital, except that it's in a sort of indigo and white plaid, and it has the V-neck. For $99, we have some sunglasses. The lenses are green, and they're almost round. I'm not sure exactly what this style is, but they're kind of large acrylic-looking frames. It says, see the light in these shades fashioned in Flint, Michigan from recycled water bottles. Go to genusee.com, G-E-N-U-S-E-E.com. Top of the page, we have a long, kind of full drawstring waist dressed in gray for $118, little cap sleeves, V-neck, like I said, a drawstring at the waist, so it's gathered and very casual looking. An effortless drawstring dress is made of the company's innovative featherweight stretch fabric, which comes from recycled polyester. Go to athleta.gap.com. Vintage chains have been repurposed, and these are kind of heavy, clunky-looking chains in different styles of link. Add shine to jeans or dresses with necklaces repurposed from vintage chains. Alex and ANI.com, and they're one of them $78, the smaller one is $58. Then we have a shopping tote in a woven fabric in off-white, blue, and green stripes. It is hand-loomed by indigenous artisans in Guatemala, and is chic enough to go everywhere with you. MercadoGlobal.org, and that bag is $78. And finally, we have some earrings that are made by craftspeople in Kenya who use sustainable brass, nearly 90% of the alloy is recycled, to forge wear-with-everything earrings. These are from shopsoco.com. They're $68. And they are two flat, almost like washers, in this sustainable brass. They're a little elongated, not perfectly round, and they're interlocking. As we wrap up the first installment in April, let's listen to some answers from the question, if you could invent one thing to help the environment, what would it be? Daisy Nelson Century of Philadelphia says, nothing upsets me more than seeing trash on the ground. I'd invent a sensor that would create a piercing sound every time someone littered. Hopefully, the sharpness of the noise would make them pick up their garbage. Kim Cronenberger of Yucca Valley, California says, biodegradable balloons that break down instantly. I live in the high desert in southeastern California, and the winds regularly bring balloons from miles away. Desert tortoises and other creatures often mistake them for food. Maggie Dixon of Hillsboro, Oregon says, a narrative that would finally convince everyone that the Earth is experiencing massive climate change because of human actions. Carletta Fannin of Lavalette, West Virginia says, a system that takes all the plastic thrown away and turns it into building blocks to create houses for the homeless. Erica Parker Price of Edmonds, Washington says, a people transporter device. I'd vacation around the world without worrying about my carbon footprint and get to work without polluting. Think of it, no more sitting in traffic, carpooling kids, or commuting. Lisa Volpe Hatchie of Hopkinton, Massachusetts says, a rainmaker. I fear that one day nations will be at war and people will die because they lack clean water. And with that, we've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Susan Dellinger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.